Good morning, everyone. Very good to see all of you. Hope you're doing well. Wanted to wish all of our mothers here a very happy Mother's Day. We're so thankful for your guidance, your leadership, your care, your love. It means so much to us. And if this day is a struggle for you for any reason, whether you've lost someone or your own struggles, know that you've been prayed for. Pray that God blesses your day and continues to bless you. Over the past couple of months, we have been once a month trying to talk about meditation. What does it mean in the Christian sense? How are we to understand it? And so meditation, we've talked about how it is speaking the things that God has called us to speak. As we learn about his nature, we learn about his character. And the more that we elevate him, the more we know about him, the more we're called to imitate him in our lives. And so that's really been our focus. Our theme text has come from Psalm chapter 19 and verse 14. It says, "May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." And so for the past couple of months, we have taken this verse and gone through it very slowly. And now we have arrived at the end. My rock, my redeemer. Two very important subjects for us to reflect on in tough situations. And so we're going to be reflecting on those two things this morning. And I hope they're going to give you some comfort and guidance. If you want to open to Deuteronomy chapter 32, we're going to begin there. Deuteronomy chapter 32. You go through and read the prophets, there is very often a like witness stand situation where Israel is to stand up for their crimes and God will call on the earth as a witness against them. Don't know exactly where that tradition starts, but that is very similar to what Moses is going to do here, and he does it in the form of a hymn. So we're going to be reading this hymn and trying to reflect on what Moses is trying to teach the people of Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 32, starting in verse 1, I'm going to read through verse 9. It says, "Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak. Let the earth hear the words of my mouth. May my teaching drop like the rain, my speech condense like the dew, like gentle rain on grass, like showers on new growth. For I will proclaim the name of the Lord. Ascribe greatness to our God. The rock, his work is perfect, and all his ways are just. A faithful God without deceit, just and upright is he. Yet his degenerate children have dealt falsely with him, a perverse and crooked generation. Do you thus repay the Lord, O foolish and senseless people? Is he not your father who created you and who made you and established you? Remember the days of old. Consider the years long past. Ask your father and he will inform you, your elders and they will tell you. When the Most High apportioned the nations, when he divided humankind, he fixed the boundaries of the peoples according to the numbers of the gods. The Lord's own portion was his people, Jacob, his allotted share." So as we think about the role of singing, as we have just done in our assembly, the goal is that it's supposed to be teaching us. It's supposed to be letting these things stick in our minds. So when I think about God, these are things that I'm thinking about. And so Moses is trying to teach his people through a hymn because he's not going to have the opportunity to teach them much longer. And so hopefully they are thinking about this hymn. Now, it's going to get pretty intense later in the chapter, but he starts off by talking about how his words are supposed to be like dew. It's supposed to help the people be growing. And so there's this warning in here about how if you follow the Lord, you follow his ways, he is going to cause you to thrive and to prosper and to live. But if you abandon the rock, if you are building on nothing, you will fail. And so he tells them in verse 3 that we need to proclaim the name of the Lord. We are going to ascribe greatness to our God. In verse 4, Moses talks about the Lord being the rock. And this is what it means for him when he talks about this is who the rock is. First of all, his work is perfect. Another way to think about it is his work is whole. God does not need anything. And so he is the one who is able to give to others. And that means that when you trust in him, what he is going to do is he's going to make you whole as well. He wants to draw you into that relationship. We see that all his ways are just. So he has no bias. He is just going to act fairly. We see that he is a faithful God who is without deceit. Having a God who is faithful is so important. when God promises the people of Israel in Isaiah that when you go through deep waters, I will be with you, he means it. He's not going to abandon you. And when he says, I'm going to forgive your sins, even as innocuous as how it seems, all I have to do is ask God to forgive me, he does. We also see that he is a God who has no deceit. We are surrounded all the time by lies. And not just that, we are telling lies to ourselves all the time. We need something like God who is not going to lie to us, who's going to be honest and truthful. And so we continue to see that he is just and upright. So this is a God who we are to follow. This is the place we can put our trust and say, he is not going to fail me. He's not going to abandon me. But his people, who are supposed to imitate his character, they are not that way. It talks about them as being degenerate, which is a really heavy word. But think about it. As God is whole and perfect and wants to give people that wholeness and wants to draw them into relationship with him, if you abandon him, how could you be whole? How can you live up to the potential that God made you for? It's impossible. And so Moses calls on them to go and just look at your past, look at your history, consider the things of old. Ask people. Because you're acting really ignorant right now. You have failed to understand what God has brought you out of, how he has saved you, how he has comforted you, how he has treated you. In verses 8 and 9, it talks about how God is the one who created all these things. He created all the nations, all the boundaries. And then, out of all the peoples of the earth, he chose you to bring his light to the rest of the world. And how you are dealing with him is spitting in his face and treating him falsely and acting so contrary to his will. Why would you do such a thing? Moses continues his lament and his anger at them in verses 10 through 18. It says, he sustained him in a desert land, in a howling wilderness waste. He shielded him, cared for him, guarded him as the apple of his eye. An eagle stirs up its nest and hovers over its young as it spreads its wings, takes them up, and bears them aloft on its pinions. The Lord alone guided him. No foreign god was with him. He set them on top the heights of the land and fed them with the produce of the field. He nursed them with honey from the crags, with oil from the flinty rock. Curds from the herd and milk from the flock, with the fat of lambs and rams, Bashan bulls and goats, together with the choicest wheat. You drank fine wine from the blood of grapes. Jacob ate his fill. Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, bloated, and gorged. He abandoned God who made him and scoffed at the rock of his salvation. They made him jealous with strange gods and abhorrent things they provoked him. They sacrificed to demons, not God. To deities they had never known, to new ones recently arrived, whom your ancestors had not feared. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you. You forgot the God who gave you birth. So Moses again goes back into their history. He's reminding them, we're in Deuteronomy. They're about to enter into the land. You guys have been brought through the desert, and who was with you the whole way? Even when you abandoned him, even when your fathers ignored him. God was right there. He sustained you. He protected you. When multiple people tried to attack them in the wilderness as defenseless people, and God protected them. When they needed water, when they needed food, God protected them. Deuteronomy, we learned that their shoes didn't wear out the entire time. God had been there with them all the way. Talks about his protection like an eagle, who one who has carried them. He's mounted them up on his own back to carry them to this land. God has guided them. No foreign God has guided them. A constant problem for Israel and for us is we try to turn to other forms of a rock. We want something to depend on, to rely on, to rest on, and then we choose everything else except for the true rock, the perfect rock, the just rock. We see how much God has blessed them with. Verses 13 and 14 talk about how he has given them all of this produce. They have honey, they have oil, they have curds, milk, lambs, rams, bulls, goats, wheat, and wine. They have a feast. And God has blessed them with that. That is by his grace. And what is their response? As they eat more and more, then they get fat and gorge, and they're like, well, now I don't need you anymore. It's one of the dangers of prosperity. Now, you can get to a point where you have so much and you assume that everything I've done is because I'm so great. I'm so smart. I've arrived. What do I need God for? I've already gotten everything I need. And so we see that Israel has turned into that. They have abandoned the God who made them, and they scoffed at the rock of salvation. God, you didn't save us. We saved ourselves. We made out of Egypt. We're so strong. We're so great. You know how dumb it looks in the text, but like, we live that. God, I can do it myself. I figured it out. I can do it without you. It also says that they made him jealous with strange gods. They go out and they're finding a new god every day. Oh, this is a new one we can worship. This one's going to actually protect us and help us. It's like, have you ignored what I've already taken you through? They absolutely have. They sacrificed to demons. They sacrificed to new gods. And in verse 18, it talks about how they were unmindful of the rock that bore you. You forgot the God who gave you birth. Days like Mother's Day are important because people are often forgetful. Forgetful of their mothers, forgetful of people who've cared about them, and certainly forgetful of the Lord. The rock is the place where you are going to find justice and truth, is going to stand firm, it's going to be consistent. And so as David writes Psalm 19, he is trying to draw us in. I need something that's going to keep me steady, who is not going to fail even when I fail. That is why I must trust in my rock. I hope that we are going to do the same. Now, just as Israel fails, we also fail. We are going to fall short. We're going to choose these other gods. And so it's important that God is not just the rock, the firm place. It's also important that he's the Redeemer. That he comes down into our mess and into our brokenness and brings us up out of it. I think few texts talk about this better than Colossians chapter 1, if you'd like to turn there. Colossians chapter 1. Paul is going to use this passage to elevate the salvation of God, show how glorious and how wonderful he is. I'm hopeful that's going to draw you into it more. Colossians chapter 1, I'm starting in verse 9. Paul writes, "For this reason, since the day we heard it, we have not ceased praying for you and asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of God's will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you may lead lives worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, as you bear fruit in every good work, and as you grow in the knowledge of God. May you be strong with all the strength that comes from his glorious power, and may you be prepared to endure everything with patience while joyfully giving thanks to the Father who has enabled you to share in the inheritance of the saints in the light. He has rescued us from the power of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins." So Paul's prayer for the Colossians is for their growth. They need to be growing into the knowledge and the goodness of the Lord. And he knows the only one who's able to give that gift is God himself. And so he's asking God, I want you to fill them. I want them to be living with this wisdom. Colossians is going to talk a lot about mind change. That as we are more filled with the Lord and the more we seek him out, the more our minds change about how we live and how we operate in this world. And so he tells them, I want this to be true of you so that you live worthy lives, that you bear fruit that honors the Lord. That is what I want for you. We also see in verse 11 that he wants them to be strong. But the only way you truly get strength is through the Lord. He is the place of ultimate strength, and so you need to trust in him. Additionally, he talks about how he gives thanks to God because God has given you an inheritance. This is something that cannot be taken away from you. God has said, I want this person. I care for them. I have transferred them out of the darkness and the brokenness that they were in and brought them to light. And that is the goodness of the good news. We don't have to get perfect or anything. It is God's grace. It is his goodness that we were wandering around, enslaved and broken in sin. And what Jesus showed us was something more lovely and more beautiful and more great than anything we'd ever encountered. A love that cannot be fathomed. And Paul is not done elevating Jesus. He's not done talking about his redemption and his forgiveness. In verses 15 through 20, it says that he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, all things have been created through him and for him. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so he might come to have first place in everything. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. So I love these verses as Paul goes in and just elevates Jesus. Important for us to reflect on. He talks about how if you want to know who God is, how he acts, just look at Jesus. That is who God is. We see that he is the firstborn of all creation. And a lot of times in our context, we think that like some people have used that as first created thing. When instead what Paul is referring to is, in their culture, the firstborn was also the inheritor. So he owns all these things. And Paul talks about that in his next point. Because everything was created by him. All the powers, all the things that we see, both that we know and the things that we don't know, that we don't see. God has created those things too. Jesus is all a part of that. Verse 17 is one of those verses that like really shakes me. It says that he himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And so if you'll follow me for a second, like, I cannot control the beating of my heart. And so God is like keeping my heart beating. And then we're traveling at an incredible velocity around the sun. And all the planets in our solar system are doing the same thing. And Jesus is able to control the beating of my heart and the planets going around the sun all at the same time without strain. That just blows my mind. Like, I cannot fathom that. And so he does all those things. Then there's like subatomic things and bigger than the universe things. All of it. He upholds it by the power of his will. That is incredible power. And he still decides that he like wants to care about us, as small and insignificant as we are. It says that he is the head of the body of the church, which is the whole purpose of the church. We come here to elevate him and show him that he's worthy. And then we want to imitate him in our lives. And so the whole point of a church, it's worthless if it doesn't do this, is to point people to Christ. That means in our teaching, that means in our actions. Both of those things come together to elevate him. And so we see that he is the firstborn also from the dead. There are many resurrections in the Bible, but there's only one where a person resurrects and never dies again. Philippians 3 has this same promise that if we trust in him, he is going to create a new body of us too. Make us like himself. In all the fullness of God was willing to dwell in Jesus, who is both God and man. And we see in verse 20 that he is reconciling all things to himself. Everything that is fallen and broken in our world. One day it's going to be set right. It's one of the most beautiful like reflections of Jesus. As we see his infinite power, and then that infinite power decides what I want in all of my glory, and I could do anything I want to spend the rest of eternity with us. And so he goes, he's going to redeem all of creation. And then in verse 21, as we're about to read, we're going to see how he has drawn us closer to himself. Verses 21 through 23 say, "And you who were once estranged and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his fleshly body through death so as to present you holy and blameless, irreproachable before him, provided that you continue securely established and steadfast in the faith, without shifting from the hope promised by the gospel which you heard, which has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven. I, Paul, became a servant of this gospel." And so we were once estranged. Our minds were not focused on the Lord. We were not focused on how we could glorify Him and honor Him and love Him, all that stuff. We were in pursuit of the evil. There's a lot of times that we think about like the good that humanity has done. There is lots of services and kindness that people do show to each other. But you do not have to look far to see how much hatred and animosity we build. And we build it very easy. And we build it over trivial things. We build it over things that don't matter. Because our minds are hostile to the love and doing good. Which means our minds need to be restored. We can't do that by ourselves. Christ is the one who comes and gives us this new body and reconciles all of the brokenness in us. And then presents us holy and blameless. All the rotten in me, He cleans up. So that we can live as the way He's called us. And so all this has been about Jesus. All this about His glory, about His power, about all that He can do. And what is our responsibility in this? It's very small. Have faith and hope. That, like Peter, our faith is often weak. We look at the waves and we start sinking down. And Christ reaches in. The same hands that brought Peter out of the Sea of Galilee also save us. They also reconcile us. And so, we are to hold on to this hope. We are to hold on to this faith, as weak as it may seem sometimes, knowing the one on the other end, the rock, the Redeemer, He is holding us close. This is part of why it's so important for us to remember that He is our rock and our Redeemer. Because as times get chaotic, we get frustrated, we get lost. We get angry at the world and all of those things. What we need is something that's going to keep us steady. And we also need something that when I do mess up and I have done something egregious or I have hurt someone that I love, I need someone who's going to tell me, I forgive you too. Jesus is both of those things to us. And that is truly tremendous. So I'm hopeful this lesson really does just like bring you comfort as you think about the Lord being your rock and Redeemer. Now, I want to encourage more of this thinking about what Jesus has done for you as we think about our applications for today. So the first one, for a meditation journal people, this one might be really challenging. It's really challenging for me, so I'm hoping it'll be challenging for you. So I'm a kind of a control freak. I like things going my way. And so when everything starts kind of like spinning out of control, you get worried and all that, I want you to write down things that go well this week that you had zero hand in. Just people were being kind to each other. You got home safely. Like, there's plenty of stuff. The flowers bloomed. And so if you stop and consider, oh, God is kind of holding everything together and I'm not doing as much as I thought I did, I think that gives us some really good perspective about how little control we have and the things we should be focused on. And then just in general, as we think about how we can apply this lesson, we talked about in Deuteronomy 32, the Lord talks about Himself as the rock who bore you. And so one of the best ways for us to think about how we can honor the Lord is how we can honor the person who bore us, the one who helped us, the people who have helped us spiritually. And so if there's a way that you can think to honor your mother or your spiritual mothers this week, I think that would be a good way to focus and think about how people have blessed you. I'm thankful for your attention this morning. And I'm very hopeful for you that, I mean, this is probably like the most chaotic times that I've lived in. And so there's this struggle of like, you know, what am I supposed to do? What am I to hold on to? And if you feel lost in that vortex and in that chaos and you're looking for something to cling to, I can offer nothing better than Jesus. And so if there's a way that you want to come to know Him, there's a way we can serve you and pray for you, encourage you this morning, please let that be known. We'll be led our invitation song.
Careless soul, what will you make?